Today's Bible reading is Judges chapter 6, verses 1 to 22, titled Gideon. The Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, and for 7 years he gave them into the hands of the Midianites. Because the power of Midian was so oppressive, the Israelites prepared shelters for them in the mountain clefts, caves, and strongholds. Whenever the Israelites planted their crops, the Midianites, Amalekites, and other eastern peoples invaded the country. They came up on the land and ruined the crops all the way to Gaza and did not spare a living thing for Israel, neither sheep, nor cattle, nor donkeys. They came up with their livestock and their trunks like swarms of locusts. It was impossible to count them or their camels. They invaded the land to ravage it. Midian so impoverished the Israelites that they cried out to the Lord for help. When the Israelites cried out to the Lord because of Midian, he sent them a prophet who said, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I brought you up out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. I rescued you from the hand of the Egyptians and delivered you from the hand of all your oppressors. I drove them out before you and gave you their land. I said to you, 'I am the Lord your God. Do not worship the gods of the Amorites, whose land you live, but you have not listened to me.' The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak in Ophrah that belonged to Joash, the Abiezrite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a winepress to keep it from the Midianites. When the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, 'The Lord is with you, mighty warrior.' 'Pardon me, my lord,' Gideon replied, 'but if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? Where are all the wonders that our ancestors told us about? When they said, "Did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt?" But now the Lord has abandoned us and given us into the hand of Midian." The Lord turned to him and said, "Go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you?" 'Pardon me, my lord," Gideon replied, "but how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family." The Lord answered, "I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites, leaving none alive." Gideon replied, "If now I have found favor in your eyes, give me a sign that it is really you talking to me. Please don't go away until I come back and bring my offering and set it before you." And the Lord said, "I will wait until you return." Gideon went inside, prepared a young goat, and from an ephah of flour he made bread without yeast. Putting the meat in a basket and its broth in a pot, he brought them out and offered them to him under the oak. The angel of God said to him, "Take the meat and the unleavened bread, place them on this rock and pour out the broth." And Gideon did so. Then the angel of the Lord touched the meat and the unleavened bread with the tip of the staff that was in his hand. Fire flared from the rock, consuming the meat and the bread, and the angel of the Lord disappeared. When Gideon realized that it was the angel of the Lord, he exclaimed, "Alas, sovereign Lord, I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face."
I wanted you to think for just a little while this morning on the subject, against all odds. Ever been in that situation? You feel like it's impossible. Well, don't drink any of my drink. That's all I'm asking, Ross. I just can't trust any of the men around this place. Thank you very much. I heard it bounce. And I might need that. I was born in 1941. That makes me 78, to save you going off with mathematics. I can't remember anything about the war, except my father and Uncle Dave lived next door to each other, and between them they dug an air raid shelter. And I have vague recollections of family trials getting down into that thing. That's all. But then in the years that followed, as I learned to read and grow, I became more and more interested in the books about what happened in the war. I love the story of a young man, teenager, who was always an adventurer. It's in the 1920s. He joins the Royal Air Force when aeroplanes weren't that old, were they? They were fairly simple in those days by comparison. And in the Air Force, he was involved in a plane crash. Douglas Bader lost both of his legs. Remember that story? Both his legs. So he gets tin legs. Some years later, the war breaks out. So he goes back into the Air Force and he convinces them that he can fly a plane, and he does. And actually, he shoots down 22 Nazi aeroplanes, which makes him the fifth most successful fighter pilot in English history. So here is Douglas Bader. Now he's in the Air Force. He's been flying for some years by this stage, just into 1942, and he's over France, and again he's shot down. This time the legs are destroyed, the tin legs. So the Germans are trying to decide what to do with him. Apparently there was an argument over whether they'd send him back, and then they said, well, he'd only get legs again and come and fight us. So they sent to England, and England provided legs for him. Then he tried to escape, and they took a leg away. How do you keep a man down like that? And can you imagine if you lost both your legs that you want to go and sign up again to go and hit a fighter pilot, risk your life? But against all odds, he did it. Some of you were in Wollongong Church when we had Ken Miedema, the blind singing. Remember him? Ken Miedema is an amazing guy. I got to know him even better when I was in the States, because we lived not far from each other and did all sorts of things together. Ken Miedema was a singer, a composer. When he was a little boy, there was an accident with whitewash that took away his eyes. He couldn't see. His father said to him, Ken, you can either now sit there and feel sorry for yourself for the rest of your life, or you can get up and live. So he got up and lived. An amazing bloke. You know what his gift was? For example, every year Robert Schuller in the Crystal Cathedral would hold this great church growth convention. Thousands of people would come. He would have church growth speakers from the best churches around the world really speaking there often. And it was a terrific event. Ken would be on the piano. Now, if I said that normally, it's that, you know, okay, he's going to accompany the hymns and the songs they have, but that's not what he was there for. I had the privilege of speaking there once. He listened to what each speaker would say, and while you were speaking, he composed a song about what you said. Now, it wasn't just some little ditty. The song that I talked about, MASH, you know, that the church should be like a MASH unit, Mobile Army Surgical Hospital, rather than a country club. The song he produced would bring tears to your eyes. Beautiful song. Ken Miedema, here he was, blind. Father says, get up and live. He decides to do that. He becomes a radiant Christian. He then gets on and has this worldwide ministry to this. He gets married to a beautiful girl, and she is a cyclist. He says, hey, I want to cycle. She said, you can't cycle, you're blind. In a movie that was made of his life, which was called He Leadeth Me, from the psalm Bruce talked about, in that movie, it shows them riding down roads together in the suburbs, and he'd be riding along on the inside of her, and she'd say, left! So he'd go to the left to go around a car that was parked. And did it successfully. It went everywhere on push bikes. He, against all odds, was able to just show such courage. I just admire people like that, don't you? I just wish I had that kind of courage, that kind of drive to be able to do that. Well, this is the story of a man who does something against all odds. But the story of Gideon is interesting, because you see these heroes and you think, oh, well, all right for them, you know, they're giants and all this. But again, the story of Gideon, this is what I like about the Old Testament. It shows you the other side of the heroes. New Testament only shows that when the heroes are fallen and finished. Here he is, and his people are in desperate trouble. The period of Judges, the book of Judges, you know, there's Genesis, Exodus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, that's the Torah, the law. That's the important part of the Bible to Jews and to Muslims. But then it comes Judges, which is kind of the history. This is before they have kings. And the period of Judges is described by some Bible scholars as the Dark Ages, of the Old Testament. Because to get out of Egypt, the people learnt great lessons but finally crossed over into the Promised Land. And then under Joshua and that, they saw great victories. Moses had delivered the law. They saw the wisdom of walking with God. But the next era, the Judges, it's a different story. They are stories like this. They're doing okay. Then they turn away from God and worship other gods. And then they suffer greatly and God raises up a hero. And heroes were called judges. Never quite could understand why that term was given, because it was more like political heroes that Israel was really low, so they would come and lift them up and encourage them and give them victory. And this story of Gideon is one of those. The Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, and for 7 years he gave them into the land of the Midianites. Because of the power of Midian, it was so oppressive that they lived in mountain clefts, etc., etc. They couldn't even just build a house or live in it, even though they were now in what was the Promised Land. They had to hide in areas, and whenever they would grow any crops or raise anything, the Midianites would just come down and take it all away from them. There was no honour in the people of God. They were smashed, they were depressed. They knew the stories of the good old days, you know, when God was with them and they did marvellous things, but now it was anything but that. It was bad days. So an angel of God appears. Now, right from the start, Gideon sensed that this being was not just some ordinary person. But later on, he's able to clarify definitely, I saw an angel of God and I'm still alive, he said. So it was not something that he took lightly. This was not something that popped up every now and then. This messenger of God comes to him and says to him, God is going to bless his people. Gideon very respectfully says, sir, I've read the stories about what God does. You ever feel like this? You read the stories of what God does, but I don't see it happening for me. It's not happening for my people. And I bet in your everyday life, when there's been some crisis and you've wanted God to do something that seems really logical to you and you can't get through to the Almighty, you think to yourself, well, I read these stories, I hear these stories and testimonies of other people, but oh, what about me? He says, why, God, I don't see an action. And God says, oh, mighty man, oh, mighty man, you're going to save your people. I don't know what went through his mind at that time. Well, we know a bit about what went through his mind because he said, I'm not a mighty man. He said, I come from the least tribe and I'm the least in my family. I'm not mighty. How can I save my people? This is one of the interesting things about God, isn't it? That he can call us to do something and we realise all our inadequacies, but God can see something in us that we can't see in ourselves. And there's also, for the believer, there's the plus of the Spirit. Plus of the Spirit. A few things I've done that were pretty successful, I've always wondered, how on earth am I in this position? Because you're always conscious when God does something that it's not you. And this is where Gideon is. Gideon's saying, hey, it's not me, Lord, what's going to happen? So God says to him, you're going to have this mighty battle. Well, Gideon, after he's recognised this is an angel of God and God's told me to do this, he goes out and campaigns. He gets an army ready. Now, they had a big population, the Jews. He gets an army of 32,000 to fight the Midianites. Looks pretty good. God says, you got too many. I imagine he's thinking, hey, Lord, what did you say? You've got too many. So, under God's instructions, he stands before 32,000. He said, look, if any of you are concerned about this or worried or afraid of being killed or something, go home now. So, Lot went home. Still, 22,000 went home, as a matter of fact. That's probably me. That might be you in that crowd too, would it? You think, well, that's a good way out. He said, go home if you're scared, and I'm scared. He's still got 12,000 people. God says, it's too many. Too many. You probably know this story, but there may be a few who haven't read it lately, so let me just remind you what happens. God says, okay, put in the test. You're in the desert, they're thirsty. Go down the river. Get them to go and have a drink. Those who lay on their bellies and lap the water like a dog would, send them home. Well, it's a bit unusual. It wouldn't be too many of us to lay on their bellies and lap it with their tongue, is there? But actually, most of them did. Only 300 didn't. So here is Mighty Mouse now standing there with 300 people. He started with 32,000. God said, if you won with 32,000, you would think you did it. Right? Remember, one man and God is a majority. One woman with God is a majority. That's all it takes. When God wants to accomplish something, he does it through people. And that's why miracles can happen with small groups of people. And so the Lord gives instructions. Everybody's to get a trumpet, a big jar, and you are to have a torch as well. And they surround the enemy and they smash, this is 10 o'clock at night, by the way, they smash the thing so there's this noise. They shout, they blow the trumpets, they hold this up. And it so terrorizes the army that they've surrounded that they start fighting each other. And then Gideon then calls in the others, and other of the original 32,000 are now they're there and chasing the Midianites out of their territory. And now Gideon is the leader. He did that against all odds. He didn't think he could do it. He wouldn't have chosen himself. Probably none of these family members would have chosen him either. But God called him to do something, and he went and did it. I don't know whether you're facing any battles, things that you've got to fight. None of us are in that heroic position where we can save the nation. But in our own world, there are battles that we have to fight. There are crises that we have to face. And sometimes we lack the courage, the drive, the faith to do it. Gideon says to us, look, with God, you can do anything. That's why Paul said, I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. Can't do it by yourself, but you can do it through Christ. Well, today the Church of Jesus Christ in Australia is facing that kind of crisis. Wouldn't you agree? We're on the bottom of the totem pole. Never been so despised, so rejected, so ridiculed, so dismissed as being a lot of fogies who just don't face reality. The church has had its day. Well, we need to keep a few things in mind. See, the church has gone through a hard time. Between 1960 and 1990, the church lost 22,000 average worshippers. 22% of people who were worshipping fell away from church in that 20 years. 22% drop in 20 years. But in the years that followed through now, it's only gone down 2%, which I guess means we've bottomed out. We've bottomed out. We think we're weak, but keep this in mind. Over the weekend, what do you got? Rugby league, you've got Australian rules. That's kind of a football, isn't it? Soccer, rugby union. All of the people that went to watch all of those matches in Sydney at the weekend did not equal the number of people who went to church in Sydney at the weekend. On any given Sunday, the population of South Australia is in church in Australia. So while we've been knocked around, and while we've suffered because society's changed and the terrible business of all those child molesters and all that, while we've suffered terribly and we have lost, we're not down and out. Jesus, our Lord, said, "I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it." 2 weeks ago, I had two things happen to me. One was I had a cup of coffee with a member of our church who asked to talk to me, and she said, "Barry," she said, "I think our church is just going to disintegrate." She said, "You'll be gone next year. I don't see us being able to go on. I'm worried." I want to share a few things with you, okay? First of all, she said, "What are we going to do? How are we going to find a minister?" Well, you've got a minister. Last Sunday, I sat in church there. Last Sunday, the last few Sundays have been a really good attendance. They're all repented and stayed away this week by the look of it. But yeah, you know, I was sitting there last week and I looked at all of you and I thought, how can I leave this group? I can't just walk out on you. Because we always thought maybe we'd be able to go back to our sister church, but they've closed that door. It's not open, at least for quite a long time, if it happens at all. So they said no. And I thought, I'm not going to walk out in this crowd. You are such a faithful people. You are such a lovely people. So the worst case scenario for ministers next year is me. And unless the board can find a younger, better version, and I encourage them to do that by all means, but we're not going anywhere. This church isn't going anywhere except up. Now, I thought, I remembered something. In 1964, we had been in our new house for 2 months when both Gay and I came to the conclusion the Lord was calling me into ministry, which would mean we'd have to leave our house, leave our job, go into college for 4 years. I remembered as I sat there last week looking at you that we got on the floor of our new house and we gave it to God and we said, "Lord, for the rest of our lives, we dedicate ourselves to you in ministry." So therefore, how can I just go away and sit on my veranda and look the kangaroos in my front yard up there in Glen Innes unless I know you've got somebody here? So you're going to have ministry, you'll be okay, right? Get that straight. So you're either stuck with me or else we'll find somebody younger and better. So this church is going further than that. Secondly, who is that protester? The second thing I want to say is by the end of next year, we'll have our own building. So how are we going to do that? Because at the moment, we break about even. How are we going to do that? Real simple. That's what I'm going to tell you now. Remember the number 40. All it takes is 40 new members and we would have enough money to have our own building. 40, that's all. You say, 40? Listen, it's only 2.5 years ago there were 23 of us in that room. 23. Now we have between 80 and 90 people who worship with some regularity. Okay? So by the end of this, you'll have our own building. No question. Because you'll do it with me or you'll do it with the next bloke, but we're going to do it. How are we going to do it? Well, let me give you two other numbers. 86 and what's the other one? Barbara? What? How am I remembering if you don't help me? I know I was going to say something. It's really important, so... Oh, it's five. Is it? Five. 86 and 5. By the time I get to 5, I'll remember what it is. I remember what it is. It's all right. Thanks, Barbara. They've done research into everything. You think church is sort of something that's not. Look, there is detailed examination by statistical experts into everything about church life. Do you know what they found? This is in England, Australia, and America. These figures came out the same. 86% of people who come to a church come for one reason. What is it? Why did they come to that church? No? Because a friend asks them. 86%. So all money spent on advertising, all that kind of stuff is good, but that is not the answer. 86% come because someone asks them. That's the 86. Now, Barbara's 5. They found that the average is a person is asked 5 times before they come. Hey, we've got a great church, would you come? No, 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 it's not my thing. Hey, we've got a special thing on a church. Would you? 5 times before the average person says yes. Now, you've sat there and you've all got friends and you've got tons of them, and if we run a social program, you're not ashamed to bring them, but you're letting them go to hell because you don't want to be embarrassed. Sorry. Isn't that true? How many of your friends are you trying to bring? That's the secret. If there's 80 of us, only half of us have to obey God to achieve the 40 to see the church really live in. It's not that hard. It just means courage. Now, I know a lot of our church members have got a bad back problem. This big yellow stripe right down the back. I don't want to be embarrassed. For goodness sake, the future of our church, rests with you, not me. I don't know many people outside you lot. I have enough trouble getting into church every Sunday. Honestly, isn't that true? You all have a congregation. Now, what can the church do to make it easier? Number one is, 20 years from now, I don't think anyone will do church the way we are. Those traditional services are going, and we're sort of semi-traditional, aren't we? You know, we have better music, but it's going to be different. So this is what we talked about at our board meeting. Our church already has some really nice petitions that we can put up to create an area with atmosphere. We already have a number of coffee tables. So instead of those big impersonal things with 6 or 8, they're 4s. We've got, what is the thing in the middle? Some kind of candle, is it?
Yep, series of candles.
Series of candles, but they're electric, aren't they? So we're not going to burn the place down, the candle. So it's that coffee shop kind of atmosphere, right? We're going to start another service, probably on a Sunday night, but I'd like your advice on that, because I wonder whether Sunday's the time to have it at all. But a kind of get-together, like, I love the name Moomba. You know Moomba Festival? What does Moomba mean in Aboriginal? Let's get together and have fun. I imagine the kind of thing that you can bring your friend to, who may be hesitant to come and sing hymns and, you know, listen to a preacher. But can you imagine walking into this place? We've got the divisions up. They've tried it out a couple of times, just see what it looks like. It looks fantastic. Everybody says that. It'll be like a coffee shop club kind of atmosphere. We have 2 of the most outstanding musicians for that kind of thing that we could ever get, don't we? It's a club atmosphere. I'd want some secular songs in as well as the Christian songs, so people feel at home. See, one of the troubles that the average church has, it's a totally different world, and you bring people in and you want them to come into your world. Whereas if you start where they are and take them to where you want to go, it's a different feeling. So it's the kind of thing, you could come in here and we've got, with Shane and Joe, people with the ability to be able to sing songs that everybody knows and all that kind of stuff. So the music would be there. It wouldn't be conventional sermons. Do we have conventional sermons? Maybe we don't. I'm not too conventional. But a lot of testimonies, people's stories of how they're coping with life. And not the kind of testimonies where, you know, oh, my life is wonderful because I have Jesus and I never have any problems. I want people to say, I'm going through hell at the moment. Will you guys pray for me? This is what's happening to me. This is what's happening to my kids. Real testimonies of real life. I'd probably give a 5-minute talk on something that would be relational, but it's the kind of thing you could bring your friends to. There'd be food. I don't know how we have coffee that's acceptable, but we'll find a way. We'll find a way. We won't start this for a couple of months because we've got too much preparation. I'm away the next couple of weeks, but I'm working like mad on ideas so that we can impact this place, because we're not going to have this many in a year's time, are we? God's going to give us at least 40 more people. He's going to give us a building. He's going to give us an impact. If you've got a building, you've got respectability, you've got 7-day-a-week programming. We all want to see kids. We get our own building. We can do all those things. And we don't need some big, expensive palace. We'll just get a warehouse or something. You know, some of the best churches in the world are being done in crummy buildings at this moment. You don't have to have the cathedrals. As a matter of fact, outsiders feel more comfortable coming into the ordinary. Now, can this be done? We had a dear minister who led me to Christ way back in the 1958 in the Wollongong Church, Mr. Anderson. He had a few stories, like all ministers, that keep coming back. And I always look forward to the ones. And he had a poem he used to quote. And it fits into what we're talking about. It couldn't be done, so someone had said, but he with a chuckle replied that maybe it couldn't, but he would one who wouldn't say so till he tried. So he buckled right in with a trace of a grin on his face. If he worried, he hid it. He buckled right in as he tackled the thing that couldn't be done, and he did it. So will we, won't we? So will we. Yeah.